Annex Wealth Management SWAT Podcast. This is episode 93, Monday, March 4th, 2024. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's insight and perspective from members of the Annex Wealth Management Investment Committee. Joining us, Ken Bellinger, Senior Trader. Hey, Ken.
Good morning, Danny.
And we got Derek Felsky, Chief Investment Officer.
Good morning, Danny and Ken. Guys, you know, there are several strengths we're seeing with the markets and the economy. We know liquidity remains ample. We know that can change quickly. Right now, there's $6 trillion in money funds that is earning, you know, a decent rate of interest, but fear of missing out is certainly a factor. We also have had a really strong labor market, and when people have jobs, they tend to spend. But I will caution people that cushion has started to disappear from all of the COVID largesse. And then finally, elevated fiscal spending continues to offset the effect of restrictive Fed policy.
You know, thinking about the liquidity and the whole money market angle of this, right? You know, it's paid handsomely for the past year, 2 years. You know, you're still seeing rates north of 5%. But at some point, as we start to see those, you know, the Fed eventually start to cut rates, which we'll talk about more a little bit later. You know, as that comes down, that becomes a less attractive option than, you know, the market or bonds themselves.
Another key strength is, you know, all the cash that corporations have, that fuels buyback activity, which puts buying pressure on the market. And the momentum, the trends tend to persist absent a negative catalyst. The S&P is up 7% year to date, up 25% from the October low. And Ken, as you pointed out earlier, you know, the Nikkei is now at its first all-time high since 1989. Sectors are trading above their 50 and 200-day moving averages. The trend is your friend, as Taylor Swift would say, the trend is your friend until it bends.
I'll move on with weaknesses here real quick. You know, with that strong open to the year here, you know, there's perhaps some of the returns being pulled forward. You know, seasonality and markets tend to turn in an election year and really until the fall. And you know, in a typical election year, we're still trying to figure out who our presidential candidates truly are. But you know, this feels like a little bit of an atypical year that way, Derek, where it seems like our two candidates are quite well known at this point.
They certainly are. You know, another weakness, you know, we talked about the strong labor market earlier, but the average work week actually is declining. And oftentimes that's a precursor to layoffs. So if the economy were to continue to muddle along, it's possible that we could see an uptick in that that employment rate, which could affect consumer spending.
Yeah, so far it's held in strong enough as far as the actual employment number, but at some level it's just employers trying to hold on to people till the absolute last moment because you don't have to, you know, fire and then hopefully when things rebound, retrain and go through that whole process, right? It's way more efficient if you're able to hold on to them with reduced hours,
absolutely,
which is what we're seeing at the moment. Another weakness we've seen here lately is the service sector PMI has been moving a bit lower as manufacturing and services prices increases in pay and wages. We've also seen a kind of piggybacking off of that inflation expectations moving up lately as well. Certainly with some of that wage pressure continuing to persist, I think a bit longer than a lot of people thought. And then globally, we've got pretty significant supply disruptions, both in the Suez Canal, which is seemingly in the news every other day with Houthi missile launches and things like that, but also in the Panama Canal, where they just, this is an odd one, haven't had enough rain over the past year to actually get the ships through because the water levels are just way too low.
So are you suggesting that companies are going to end up passing along higher costs to consumers?
That's something I'd be watching for in the next couple of months. Is it takes a little bit for those kind of shipping rates to reflect into end prices, but certainly in the spot market, you've seen shipping rates increase very significantly over the past quarter.
You know, another weakness I think I want to highlight, and this is really more related to the markets, it's not necessarily a valuation or economy call, but the present conditions we see really do mirror what a market peak looks like. We see high valuation in some of the largest stocks, like Nvidia trading at 32 times revenues, Microsoft trading at 13 times revenues and 37 times earnings, well above their 10-year average. So, you know, in some ways, you know, it's now making sense for companies. When interest rates were low, they would finance their growth through bond sales because it costs them nothing to borrow. But now it makes more sense for them to issue stock. And that can have a dilutive consequence on shareholders. In other words, it dilutes the value of the shares and causes them to decline. So that could turn into a headwind.
We've talked on this podcast multiple times, you know, about kind of our focus on quality over the past year and a half. And this is exactly why, right? Those companies with the really strong balance sheets, either they refinance their debt and it kind of moves along without a hiccup, or they've just got the cash to persist through this. What you're probably likely to see, and we're starting to see it a little bit, is, you know, especially in smaller cap companies or, you know, I guess call it poorly capitalized companies, is the issuance of straight equity, which is obviously a pain point for shareholders, but also a bit of an increase in convertible debt. So things like convertible bonds, convertible preferred securities, which pay you a yield just like a bond would, but at a, you know, has at a certain point in time, Depending on what the conditions are of the actual convertible bond, you know, those convert into equity as well. In the end, both dilutive and potential headwinds for, you know, poorly capitalized companies.
Well, and I think that's why we've seen the small cap indexes dramatically lag the large caps. The large caps are in better shape, better balance sheets, probably smarter management teams, and more, you know, diversification in terms of their ultimate product lines. And then the final weakness we saw last week was in the PCE report, the inflation report that the Fed monitors. We saw a really big jump in the super core inflation indicator, which is what Chairman Powell claims is his most reliable indicator of future trends in inflation. And that's the inflation number that excludes food, energy, and housing. So that's something to keep in mind as well, because many people believe the Fed is going to cut rates significantly this year, and that may slow the process.
Yeah, we've gone from, you know, when the year started, we were at, you know, an expectation of 6 to 7 cuts. The market's already down to 3, but, you know, there's been a lot of Fed speakers of late, and their tone certainly hasn't been of, you know, aggressive cutting coming anytime soon. It's been way more reserved.
All right, so Ken, from your perspective, what are the opportunities out there?
Sure, so think about fixed income for a moment. You know, we've got really attractive real rates. You know, bonds continue to provide a benefit to the overall portfolio, so, you know, use them. Right. Make sure you've got your proper allocation of fixed income to equities, that ratios in balance for what your, you know, risk tolerance is. And don't be afraid to move into fixed income here, even though, you know, spreads are a little bit tight compared to historical norms. But you're getting paid for once. You know, I feel like that's been a message we've had for a year, but it still rings true.
You know, as far as the equity market goes, you know, when I think about the Magnificent Seven, we're looking at fabulous companies, great balance sheets, growing faster than the market, but there are also lots of opportunities in the other 493 companies in the S&P 500 and also overseas. And the valuations are much more attractive, more reasonable. So when people say the stock market's had too big a run and it's poised to collapse, I mean, they've got to realize that the average multiple of those other stocks is about normal. So if AI is able to improve their efficiencies, improve their margins, improve their sales growth and their opportunities, they're, you know, stock picking is going to come back in favor.
Talk about AI here for a second. That seems to be the magic word that nearly every company tried to find a way to work into their earnings releases and into their earnings transcripts lately, where it's, you know, just keep saying the magic word and the stock price will go up, right? But in reality, to your point, those that are best able to actually implement AI into their workflows, and maybe not even necessarily to replace labor, but just to improve the efficiency of the labor that's there, you know, they're going to be strong beneficiaries going, especially as we head into 2025, when some of those impacts really start to hit. I kind of think of, you know, where we are now is still kind of in development. You know, certainly AI is out there. It's a hot topic and all that, right? But it's going to take time for those workflows to be developed and then actually result in improved efficiencies. But I kind of think of it like, you know, if you're building a house or something, right? You got to lay the foundation. If you're in Wisconsin, there's a basement, right? And then you lay the framework and then eventually you get to move in, right? Well, we're laying the framework right now.
Yeah, one of the things Jason Cooper, who's our lead equity analyst, talks a lot about is when he listens to conference calls and evaluates companies, one of the questions he always asks is, you know, to what degree AI could help enhance their profitability? Because what we want to do in our equity holdings is buy companies that have high margins, higher than typical industry margins, and margins that are going in the right direction. And AI can certainly contribute to that, which is one of the reasons why we believe not 2024, but in 2025, we could see an earnings explosion, which in many ways would validate the market reaction we've seen so far this year.
Yeah, there's always two ways for that multiple to come down, right? One is the more negative version is that prices come down significantly and that hurts everybody. The other way is, you know, earnings per share increase. And AI is going to be a huge contributor to that. I think we all are in agreement with that.
You know, and also on last Friday, we saw the Dell report. It was an amazing report. And that just shows AI isn't just NVIDIA. It also is the companies that make, you know, edge materials, silicon, PCs, and so on. That could expand into not just, you know, names like NVIDIA and Microsoft, which everyone's aware of, but also into some of these lower multiple technology companies, too, because usually tech companies are pretty aware of what's going on in their industry, and they're going to implement margin-enhancing benefits of AI across the board. So what other areas, Ken, you know, in terms of opportunities, do you think people should be looking at?
Sure. Well, just given the strong run the market's had of late, I think it's kind of a decent time here to look at more defensive areas. You know, healthcare had its worst relative year ever. You know, 25% down versus the rest of the market presents a pretty attractive opportunity in my view. And also energy. You know, energy companies have continued to really focus on restraining CapEx, which is a much different dynamic than you've seen in pretty much any other period. This is kind of a new phenomenon. OPEC continues to extend their voluntary output cuts. And interestingly enough, you know, XLE has actually outperformed VGE PCT since the beginning of 2022. So it's been a strong market. Cash flows in that sector are incredibly strong, even with, you've seen that gas prices kind of collapse here of late, at least domestically, with, you know, really the warm weather coupled with the Biden administration no longer issuing permits for LNG exports. So that's kind of artificially brought down prices domestically. But long term, if you look at, you know, both crude and nat gas, especially into an economic recovery, structurally, there's going to be a shortage again. So,
yeah, I think, you know, Jason has said many times that the valuations of energy stocks are very attractive, particularly when you add in the generous yields many of them offer. So what kind of threats do you see on the horizon, Ken?
Sure. So I think the first one, we've kind of alluded to it a little bit here, less Fed rate cuts than expected, or even frankly, possibility than the possibility of no rate cuts in 2024. You know, several governors say their biggest risk is cutting too soon. The economy is not slowing. You know, we've got some trends in inflation rising a little bit. Core inflation's rising. The labor market continues to be tight. We're seeing prices continue to increase. You know, workers' compensation, as we've talked about, is still increasing. Rental prices are still going up. And financial conditions overall are still fairly easy.
So you're suggesting the Fed might realize that their policy isn't as restrictive as they thought?
Absolutely. The long-term goal has always been traditionally, right, 2% inflation for the Fed. And we've got to 3, and we're kind of hovering here for a little bit. And there's a lot of, you know, headwinds and tailwinds in terms of, you know, supply demand dynamics. I think the supply chain issues we talked about earlier are going to end up playing a bigger part than I think a lot of the market's realizing right now. But yeah, I think there's a lot of headwinds out there to the idea of rate cuts.
And you also mentioned earlier your expectation about higher oil prices. I don't think that's in the market either. And we're going against very easy comps in those inflation numbers with regard to the price of gasoline and oil. So that could put upward pressure on CPI and PPI and the rest. And then finally, you know, one of the things I always like to look at to evaluate stocks is what the high yield market is doing. And right now, spreads are incredibly tight, meaning people do not believe there's much chance of default. They're much tighter than the 10-year average. And the Japanese yield control element also continues to have a factor, right? It's the carry trade. People short the yen at a very low interest rate and go out and take that capital and buy assets overseas. But if the yen starts to go down because Japanese yield control diminishes, you could squeeze the carry trade and cause people to reverse those positions, which could put downward pressure on risk assets across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to circle back to high yield for a second, you know, we're seeing spreads about 40 to 50 basis points tighter than, you know, kind of what we'd seen historically over a 10-year average, you know, a little bit ignoring some of the COVID noise, right, because that really skews things. But it's tight. No way around it that the market's not pricing in a ton of risk at the moment.
Well, and the other thing, too, is, you know, we've been saying for a long time that the Fed, you know, fight the Fed. The Fed policy has been restrictive. But monetary policy, we know, is a very blunt instrument. It takes time to have an impact. And real rates have only recently gotten positive. In fact, they're positive now by a very wide margin. We are seeing at the margin some delinquency rates rising, whether it's credit cards or mortgage payments. You mentioned the spreads. And, you know, we mentioned the fact that the work week is shortening, which suggests that layoffs may occur. And that could ultimately impact confidence and spending. And I don't think the market is pricing that in at the moment.
You know, to think about specifically banks here for a moment, too, as well. You know, you've got potentially some contagion risk here from commercial real estate. You know, we had that scare back in March of 23, and then that kind of dissipated. But recently, New York City Bancorp's kind of come into focus with a lot of their CRE exposure. And then on Friday, they announced that they weren't going to file their 10-K in time, so that, you know, their stock plummeted as a result of that. So what is the meaning of that? Well, I guess we'll find out when they actually release the 10-K in a couple of weeks, but certainly not doing much to alleviate concerns about that space.
You know, as our founder Dave Spano always likes to say, there are two things that are consistent in terms of triggering a stock market correction. One is a Fed policy error where they've been restrictive for too long and failed to respond in a timely way. And the other is a geopolitical event. And clearly, in the backdrop geopolitical, there are all sorts of hot spots around the globe. And it's very hard to invest based on your expectations concerning a geopolitical event, but it's certainly something that I would hope our listeners are at least monitoring, because, you know, when things go your way, your portfolio gets out of whack. And it's at times like these that you want to rebalance and get back to your target. Because right now, if you hold a growth fund, it's probably well above your target because of the performance there versus value. And while I'm not suggesting growth stocks are going to underperform dramatically, it just is a way of managing risk.
Yeah, to be clear, we're not advocating, you know, running away from the markets here and, you know, just stockpiling cash and hiding. But to your point, you know, if you've had a couple of either individual stocks or, like, these are the growth sector names that have really run here, there's nothing wrong with taking a little bit of a profit and reinvesting it, you know, perhaps towards fixed income, you know, perhaps a little bit in the money market for the short term, or, you know, just bring yourself back in line with, you know, what your long-term goals are. Because, yeah, if you're not paying attention for a couple of years, they can really get out of whack really quick, and then you really feel the downside if and when that happens. Derek, why don't we kind of jump into our three takeaways here?
Well, to me, I think rates are going to be sticky. I think real rates are going to stay high for longer. That's competition for stocks. That's a headwind. And that could potentially lead to a correction because at some point something may break.
Go ahead.
You know, another one sort of along the same lines is inflation is likely to remain very sticky. And then finally, you know, we are in an election year. Typically, the markets don't really do a whole lot from March until the end of summer until the outcome is clearer. And what we all know is divided government tends to be best for the performance of equity. So if your expectation is the Democrats are going to sweep or the Republicans are going to sweep, returns tend to be lower in both circumstances. So you got to monitor that as well.
Annex Wealth Management SWAT Podcast, that is episode 93. Ken Bellinger, Senior Trader, thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
Derek Felsky, our Chief Investment Officer, thanks.
My pleasure, Danny.
Annex Wealth Management, LLC, is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit annexwealth.com. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is subject to change without notice. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and don't necessarily reflect on those of Annex Wealth Management, LLC. Information presented should not be construed as tax, legal, or investment advice, or a recommendation or a solicitation for the sale of any product or strategy. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from qualified professionals to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Investments involve risk. Neither Annex Wealth Management, LLC, nor its podcast participants shall be liable for losses resulting from decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on this podcast.